Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, March 14th, 2017. South Sudanese church leaders say the government is blocking the opposition from attending the national dialogue.
To put a precondition for the national dialogue is, for me, like declaration of a war. I would say that it is unfortunate to begin putting preconditions immediately after the national prayer we just held last Friday.
And a government spokesman says foreigners working in South Sudan must have work permits.
If you want to continue to earn your living in South Sudan, you pay the dues of the people of South Sudan. You pay for your residence permit, you pay for your work permit, and you pay for your visa.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese church leaders say the government should not set any preconditions for participation in the national dialogue, which President Salva Kiir initiated last December. Last week, government spokesman Michael Makuei said rebels and people living under their control must first renounce violence before taking part in the dialogue. Church leaders say such preconditions will cripple efforts to end fighting in the country. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Father Santino Mourinho, a priest at the Catholic Diocese of Wau and chaplain at the Catholic University of South Sudan in Wau, says demanding that the armed opposition and people living within rebel-held territory renounce violence before participating in the national dialogue means the government's opponents will have no place to express their grievances.
Process to peace is always that somebody must admit, I have done here, you have done your mistake, I have done my mistake, and therefore we open new page in order to resolve our differences, to resolve our problem. But I think precondition will not resolve the problem.
Father Santino is urging the South Sudan government to learn from the former apartheid government of South Africa, which issued preconditions for holding a dialogue with apartheid opponent Nelson Mandela. But after imprisoning him for 27 years, Mandela was released and the president of South Africa and Mandela held unconditional talks, something Father Santino says led to freedom and justice for the South African people.
Nelson Mandela was in the prison for 27 years. He was in the prison because they were giving him preconditions. But later on, when that president came, he said, no, there is no precondition. Let Nelson Mandela come out from the prison. And when he came out, he was called for reconciliation. He was called for forgiveness. That all of us, we are South Africans, we are rainbow nations. I am not in the prison for against the white people or in favor of the black people, but in the prison for justice, for freedom of the people, of the whole people of God.
Eliaba Laku, Bishop of the Episcopal Church of Sudan and the South Sudan in Lanya Diocese, says the armed opposition must be approached to find an amicable way of ending the conflict. Bishop Eliaba says the government will not succeed if it fails to hold a completely inclusive national dialogue. He says the church is ready to mediate with the armed opposition groups if they are allowed to involve the warring parties in the peace process.
The government knows, the government which was in the guerrilla warfare, they knew that it's not easy to defeat a guerrilla warfare. So let us compromise and come down and see whether we can reach a conclusion. But I don't know how the mechanism the government wants to make to lay down the weapons and dialogue. That has never happened in anywhere.
Bishop Eduardo Hiboro Kusala, who is also president of the Sudan and South Sudan Catholic Bishops Conference, says the church was pleased to hear President Kiir ask for forgiveness during Friday's National Prayer Day. But Bishop Hiboro says placing a precondition on the dialogue is like declaring war against the partners of the country's dialogue.
We went back to God to say, look, we have gone wrong and we would like to begin life again. Now, to put a precondition for the national dialogue is, for me, like declaration of a war. I would say that it is unfortunate to begin putting preconditions immediately after such a prayer, national prayer we just held.
Bishop Hiboro says the door of national dialogue should be open to all South Sudanese, regardless of the differences in opinion or tribal affiliation.
My advice is no preconditions. let the door be open.
Bishop Bloku says church leaders remain ready to try to bring the armed opposition to the table if the government asks them to do so. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
Officials in Wau say three people were killed in Kwajin County of Wau State on Sunday when members of armed groups believed to be loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar attacked two vehicles traveling on the Wau-Rumbek Road. Kwajin County Commissioner says the attack occurred about 5 kilometers east of Wau Town. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Juba.
Kwajin County Commissioner Barjok Uchu says the two lorries or trucks set off from Wau heading to Juba on Sunday morning. He says SPLA IO rebels suspected to be loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar attacked the trucks after traveling for 3 hours. Speaking in Arabic, Uchu says the armed men attacked the trucks at Jebel Tik and killed three South Sudanese nationals.
There was a woman in the truck, but they did not kill her. They looted all the phones, money, and other belongings. And the Somalis were asked to continue their journey.
Commissioner Uchu says the dead include the driver, his assistant, and one passenger. He says county authorities sent some SPLA soldiers to patrol the area. Uchu is calling on the state and national officials to deploy more security forces in the area to prevent future attacks on the road linking the Greater Bahr Ghazal to capital Juba.
We are still informing the state or the national government to send us more security forces on the ground. If this road is closed down, our region will be cut off from the capital. And this might increase more suffering on civilians, because right now all of us are depending on food that comes from Juba through this road.
Last month, the governor of neighboring Tonyi State, Akech Tongaleu, accused communities in Wau's Kwajin County of being rebel supporters after deadly communal clashes that forced civilians to flee their homes. Many of those who fled their villages sought shelter in Wau, which he says local leaders are trying to normalize the security situation in the area so that civilians can return to their villages to prepare their land before the rainy season begins.
Civilians are now under the trees, and the rainy season is almost coming. The government needs to do something on the security situation so that they could go back to their villages and prepare for cultivation.
SPLA-IO military spokesperson William Gadget denies having any knowledge of the attack.
So I don't have information about that attack in Wau. Of course, this morning I talked to one of our commander in Wau, and he didn't tell me if there was an accident that should be car on the road. He didn't tell me at all.
For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
A U.S.-based charity group says aid workers that were held by armed groups in Unity State in South Sudan have been released and flown to a safe location. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
Seven staff members for the Christian humanitarian aid organization Samaritan's Purse were released from detention Tuesday in South Sudan's famine-stricken area of Mayandit. Samaritan's Purse Vice President of Programs and Government Relations, Ken Isaacs, says they were arrested by local officials Monday.
So I think there was some local dynamic involved, and we don't have all of those details right now, but what I can tell you very happily is that all of the staff have been released and they're safe. That bit we know. So they have been released.
Isaacs says opposition forces and those loyal to the government warned his organization 2 weeks ago they were preparing to fight. So Samaritan's Purse evacuated between 12 and 15 foreign and South Sudanese aid workers who were not from Mayandit at that time. A request for response was not immediately returned from South Sudan's information minister. Isaacs also clarifies that despite prior reports, the situation was a detention and not a kidnapping.
They were clearly held against their will, but we don't see it as a kidnapping. There was no ransom request made on us.
Samaritan's Purse has been working with the World Food Program to distribute food in Mayandit for more than 2 years. And Isaacs says they plan to return.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, we'll go back. But we've got to have, you know, we'll have to work our way through it and talk with the parties involved. We need some assurances that there's going to be civil behavior And this war and this factionalism, this tribalism that's going on in South Sudan is incredibly destructive. There is going to be no winners. There's only going to be more losers and more suffering and more death.
The United Nations and the government of South Sudan say famine in two counties of Unity State, Mayandit and Leer, is affecting more than 100,000 people and has warned that it could spread further. Roughly half of South Sudan's population is projected to be severely food insecure by July. South Sudan's government recently stated it would increase the work permit fee from $100 to $10,000 for each foreign aid worker. South Sudan has become Africa's biggest migrant crisis, as an estimated 1.5 million people have fled to neighboring countries. Tens of thousands of people have been killed since civil war broke out in December 2013. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
The South Sudan government has increased the amount of fee for work permits for foreigners working in South Sudan. A government circular issued earlier this month says work permit fees for professionals and business class have increased from $300 to $10,000 per year. South Sudan government spokesman insists the increase are in line with a resolution passed recently by South Sudan's parliament. Wakis Simon Wudu has more from Juba.
Aside from the much higher fee for professionals, work permits for blue-collar workers have also soared. They went from $150 to $2,000 per year. And fees for casual workers, such as construction workers, increased from $100 to $1,000 a year. A circular issued by the Undersecretary for Labor and Industrial Relations in the National Ministry of Labor, Public Service and Human Resource Development on March 2nd said the changes take effect immediately. Government spokesman Michael Makwe says all foreigners working in South Sudan must pay the new work permit fees.
If you want to continue to earn your living in South Sudan, you pay the dues of the people of South Sudan. You pay for your residence permit, you pay for your work permit, and you pay for your visa.
Those who must pay $10,000 a year include doctors and bankers. It's not clear whether the professional class includes foreign journalists. Makwe says the order does not apply to foreigners working with the diplomatic missions in South Sudan. He says the government will ensure that foreigners pay the required fees.
There is no way anybody who does not want to pay these fees should pack and go. We will not ask him as to why, but definitely will be losing his job.
Last month, UN agencies declared a localized famine in two counties of former Unity State, so aid workers have been ramping up to respond to the hunger crisis. They say up to 100,000 people have nothing to eat in the former Unity State. In addition, aid agencies say more than 40% of South Sudan's population is in need of food aid. Ask it why the government is jacking up the cost of work permits at a time when tens of thousands of South Sudanese are in need of emergency assistance from international aid agencies. Makwe had this to say.
The government is free to do whatever it wants to do at any time. Which to eat is appropriate time. So if there are those who believe, who say that, why do it at this time? It is done at this time because the government believes that this is the right time.
Several officials with non-governmental organizations operating in South Sudan declined to comment publicly on this story despite repeated attempts to get in touch with them. Pius Ojara, director of the Secretariat of the NGO Forum, an umbrella group representing both national and international aid organizations working in South Sudan, says the NGO Forum has been engaging with the government officials since the new fee structures were announced on March 2nd but declined to comment further. Wake Simon Wudu, VOA News, Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a local NGO uses film to urge girls to stay in school. Find out how when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today,
What's the worst weather event that you've lived through?
Summer in South Sudan, because I get to have rashes on my neck and everywhere, and that just makes my looks bad.
That was back in Khartoum in 1997. There was a time we went to the market to buy some food items and so many things. But then came a very terrible weather. That is a sandstorm. That was one of the worst weather conditions I have seen in my life.
That was last year's rainy season when Malawi experienced floods and some of the houses had to be washed away.
I was very young and I went outside to get something. Thunderstruck. I don't know how it happened, but I found myself on the floor. I couldn't walk.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. And today we are talking about malaria. Burundi has declared a malaria epidemic in the country as the number of cases and deaths continue to rise. Moses Havyarimana has more from Bujumbura.
The Burundi government says there have been more than 9 million malaria-related cases recorded since January last year. According to the Burundi Health Minister, Josiane Nijimbere, more than 3,700 people have died from malaria since 2016.
Le ministère de la Santé publique et de la lutte contre le sida confirme aujourd'hui.
She says the Ministry of Health confirms today that Burundi is facing an epidemic of malaria. Josiane says from the beginning of this year, more than 1 million malaria-related cases were recorded. The government says there has been a 13% increase in malaria cases compared to last year. The northern provinces of Kirundo, Muyinga, Chankuzo and Kayanza have been the most affected by the disease. Dr. Walter Kazadi is the World Health Organization representative in Burundi.
You know, the malaria epidemics are multifactorial. There might be climatic factors, and you know Burundi has been affected by El Nino with rising temperatures, and she mentioned it actually. Because of the rising temperature, the area in the northern part who are with the rising of the temperature, they became prone.
Kazadi praised Burundi's move to declare the epidemic, as it will help to reduce malaria risks and deaths.
Yeah, the first priority for the World Organization is to work with all the partners and the Minister of Health to finalize that outbreak response plan and then to engage in resource mobilization. WHO is going to provide the technical support. We are going to deploy specialists, malaria specialists, epidemiologists, entomologists to boost the response to the malaria outbreak in Burundi.
According to the Burundian government and the World Health Organization, $31 million is needed for the response plan in order to reduce the malaria infection and death rates. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
A local non-governmental organization in South Sudan is using documentary to help young girls enroll and stay in school. Crown the Woman is visiting schools across the country, telling young girls that the keys to success include studying hard and graduating from school. Mungume Dave's Rokarange has this report for VOA from Juba.
Dozens of children at John Garang's primary school in Juba's New Site neighborhood gather around a small screen to watch a short documentary called Akelo. In the 18-minute film, a schoolgirl named Akelo is misled by her peers to elope with an elderly man for money. She eventually becomes pregnant. Her parents send her away from home, forcing her to live with an elderly man. Then the man sends her away from his home and she ends up living a miserable life without basic necessities. Eventually, she decides to return to her parents' home. Akela's maternal uncle decides to give her a chance to study again. 16-year-old Jacqueline Akur, a primary 8 pupil, says she learned from the film to avoid bad groups.
What I have saw there, that friend of that girl took that girl to a wrong way. And then that girl gets pregnant and then she is free. For us is to learn and to understand something from the school so that we will be good in our future.
The film's producer, Busuruagabdiel Walter, says he was inspired by his own experience to shoot the film. Both her grandmother and mother were married before the age of 18. And just 5 years ago, his sister, who was then 16, got pregnant and was forced to marry a man old enough to be her father. The marriage did not last. She agreed to go back to school after her parents and friends convinced her to do so.
We were still asking, who wants to become a lawyer? Lawyer? Oh, the whole class, lawyers. Doctors? Whoa. Economics? Okay, you will not become a doctor if you don't stay in school. You will not become a doctor if you get pregnant and drop out, okay? So let us stay in. Let us stay in.
School.
Good.
Rhea Williams, co-founder of Crown the Woman, talks to the John Garang Primary School children, telling the young girls that she and other women with the NGOs have withered hardships to reach where they are today. Amor Martha, who teaches English in Primary 3 at this school, says the film will help instructors teach their students about reproductive health. She says 5 pupils got pregnant at her school last year and won't be returning to study.
If we are talking to the girl, maybe they can say, no, why are you got married? You don't want me to have a child also. It is good now for those who are come like Rieyo and Aluel to come and encourage our girl not to drop out.
17-year-old Rebecca Ayak, a primary 8 pupil, is also a head girl at the school, agrees.
They are encouraged so that we can learn how to be respect girl or elder of tomorrow in our future. If God is willing, I will become like them.
Rebecca says students in her school lack the basics, including playgrounds, footballs, and netballs. More importantly, she says, more than 1,000 students in the school are forced to share one toilet.
We have two. One is for the teachers and one is for Fairfield, who are in this school.
Busurwa says such a film's open dialogue between young people and their caretakers.
By the time it was done, everyone now is like, oh my God, I cannot do this again. Even if that kid was doing it already, they give you their views. They share with you in an open way whereby you advise them.
Above all, Busurwa says, the government must invest more money in education across the country. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Some women in the Imatong state capital, Torit, say they are proud. They run a business, earn money and fend for their families instead of being confined to the kitchen. These women say they are not giving up the struggle to achieve gender equality. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Torit.
A group of Torit women who run small businesses say if South Sudanese women are going to contribute in any meaningful way to development and move beyond cultural barriers, more women must step up and embrace business and education. Hawa Apai says she began running her own business at the age of 8 by selling goods at a local market in a border town.
I started making business when I was 8 years. Since I was 8 years young, I started make my business. I started with a grant at this school, Madamas, in Nimule. Because I was orphan, I grew up with my grandmother, which don't have eyes. I did go even to school. That's why I started my business since I was 8 years. I'm handling my money in the village bank. I keep my sanduk. Dizzy, we are making it like a small box like this. And then we put our money inside. You just throw your money. You get 100, you throw. You get £1, you throw. I start to keep my money in the village bank in my house.
Apai says with the money she earns, she supports her husband, 5 children, and pays for their children's school fees. Apai says education will help South Sudanese women become economically independent instead of relying entirely on their husbands for financial support.
Now, women, we stand at home like a man. Your husband have money, but a little money. This one, you are working in the market. You take care of the children and you take care of the home. This time now, children are going to the school. You cannot leave that, let the husband, your husband to pay children to the school because he's the father of home. If you have money, you should help. You see? You should push the children to go.
But Apai says Widespread insecurity across the country makes it impossible for many women to engage in small-scale business to earn a living.
You will have money to put a big business, but you will fail to put that big business because the security of road is not good. You will send your money to bring goods from Uganda. The money get enter in the ambush. They will steal each and everything in the money that's in the vehicle. That's why you remain with this small.
Apai says even uneducated women can earn a living and help support their families. Dorit women's rights activist Hidita Lily agrees. Lily returned to school at an adult age where she attended the same class with her second-born child at Dr. John Garang Memorial Secondary School. She says now she can plan and run a business. Dorit resident Lily John also enrolled in school at a late age, but says she is unable to concentrate on her studies because of her domestic chores that take up much of her time. Speaking in Arabic, John encourages other women to try to get an education so they can empower themselves, saying she knows all too well that it is not an easy thing to do. Lily John says she wakes up at 6 in the morning and prepares tea for her children to go to nursery school. Then she says at 7 o'clock she leaves home for work, where she remains until 12 o'clock. She says she gets back home to prepare lunch for her children. John says she stays home until 2 o'clock, then goes to adult school, where she stays up to 4 o'clock. Then she gets back home. She says if she don't do that, she will not be able to provide for her children. Many parents here marry off their girls at a young age, denying them the chance to acquire an education, which only perpetuates gender disparities, a hallmark of South Sudanese culture. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Potential by Radio and Weasel.
Hey yo. This is General Ozzy alongside Radio and Weasel, and this was going out to all the potential ladies in the world.
We have been listening to Radio and Weasel with the song Potential. Indeed, our South Sudanese women and girls have the potentials to rise up. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for making us part of your evening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.